My dear friends, it's a very sad day today in Ukraine and worldwide. And among these lines, I would like to share a link with you if you look in the description below. So one of the amazing ladies that I interviewed a while ago, she was helping raising funds for a charity or an NGO that used to support creative projects during peace times. Well, now they are raising funds to help people find a shelter so that they can be safe. So if you can help in any way, you can donate money on that link. Meanwhile, I'll leave two episodes. Mind you, they are older episodes with the two amazing Ukrainian ladies that I had the pleasure to meet. It's Natalia and Olya, so that we all have a reminder of how amazing Ukraine is. Hi, Natalia, and welcome to my podcast.
Hello.
Natalia, tell me a little bit about yourself. So were you born in Ukraine? Is that right?
Yes. I was born in Ukraine in 1985, and I lived in Ukraine until I was 24. I lived in a little town, railway town called Dolbuniv in Rivne region, and it's on a border with Belarus and Poland in northwest part of Ukraine.
How was your childhood? How do you remember your childhood?
We lived in a little town that on a border with the villages. Mm-hmm. So I remember since I was, very little child, going out and exploring rivers and forests and little valleys nearby. And I had a great childhood, yeah. Oh, I've been mushrooming, and I still love mushrooming since I was a little child. And now another one of my passions is actually foraging in forests. And I never thought that that would be something very different, because where I'm from, it's very natural way of living. But in England, a lot of people are afraid of foraging and eating wild mushrooms. So I also now share my little expertise on foraging as well.
That's amazing. So my boyfriend really, really loves cooking in general, and he loves mushrooms. And I'll send you the picture later. But basically, he went here in the UK and he picked porcini mushrooms, you know, seps.
Yeah.
So because he doesn't know how to do it, I imagine you know much more about it. But seps are the safest ones that you can pick without going wrong, I suppose.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and chanterelles. Like seps and chanterelles are the ones that if you've seen them once or somebody showed you once how they look, I think maybe 90% or 100% you will be sure next time what to pick without picking something inedible or poisonous. Oh, really.
That sounds amazing. Okay, so a lot of people that I interview, especially from the East, including myself, when we left our countries, we went to a different country, and we were so busy assimilating the new culture and the new things that we parked for a bit our interest for our countries. So, for example, you know, I was really trying to adapt to the new country, and I wasn't too interested in Moldova, for example. And then after a few years, I started getting interested in Moldova again, and I started re-loving the traditions. And I'm wondering if the same happened to you. What happened to you after you left Ukraine? Or did you keep having the love for Ukraine and in the same time adapting to, because you moved straight to the UK, is that right?
Yes, well, I never wanted to leave Ukraine. That's something that never crossed my mind, that I ever will be living in a different country. Mm-hmm. I lived for 4 years before I moved to UK in an artist commune in the Transcarpathian region. It's on a border with Slovakia, Hungary, and Romania. In a near forest, in a village, and we started a big theater project there that's still going on. And actually, today it's 15 years since we started the project, and it's still going strong today, 1st of October. That's the first time when we came to the village to work with young people. I was studying theater then.
Yeah.
And I lived for 4 years in Ukraine, and I never wanted to move out of my country. It's just happened because I met my husband. We met very long time ago through an organization called YMCA, and it's a youth organization that is worldwide. And he was really interested to live in Ukraine, but then he visited commune, and I think communal life just wasn't something that he was imagining. I mean, he was imagining, but not what practically worked for us. So we moved to UK for first for 6 months, and then it's just became a permanent home, really, now. It's just what happened. But I always, because I was living for 4 years in a commune, I was heavily involved in social projects, cultural projects in Ukraine, in the rural areas. I really, and then when I've been kind of taken out, I felt very lonely that I don't have that around me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was supporting from the beginning projects from abroad. I started to work as a youth worker because I saw that that's kind of a transferable skill that a theater director could start work as a youth worker. And then maybe 2 years after, I always wanted to talk about Ukraine a lot and sharing how wonderful it is. And then my friend said, why don't you do trips to Ukraine? And I said, oh, that's a good idea. Because I did a lot of evenings, fundraising events, Ukrainian events, where I taught people Ukrainian Transcarpathian dance, and I cooked food for them. I showed the project that we are supporting, youth theater project in a village. And I started that to do very early. Maybe I moved in 2010, and I think my first fundraising event was in 2011. So it was just a year after I moved. And I felt very connected, and I found that this is the way I feel settled in this country. So when I came first, I felt like I am a second class person for some reason. People always assume that you come to UK, especially in a rural area where I live. I live in Herefordshire, and Herefordshire is a very farming community. It's not a multicultural community like in London or Bristol or Birmingham, you know, where people... Here it's very, you're confronted with a little bit of coldness first if they hear your accent.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you experience the same, but when I moved, I was pregnant. So when I moved to Herefordshire, I just gave birth, and I lived in a family where there is only my husband that goes to work, and then I don't have anyone else around me. So whenever I've gone outside, I always felt like people trying to talk loudly to me because they think that I would understand them better.
Aww,
and
okay.
Also ask questions like, oh, but you moved here because you work on a farm, aren't you? And I felt like, I think these presumptions are not right for every person, for anyone really, but I didn't want really to explain a lot why I felt like, you know what. So when I started my business, Experience Ukraine, I felt in the right place because people were coming to me if they're interested in my country or in what I'm doing, instead of me trying to come to them, you know, in a way. Anyway, so that's...
Did the attitude change once people started knowing you?
Yes. I mean, I think when you're a young mother, just came to the country, maybe you don't know English as well as I do it now, you know, you're very vulnerable. So and maybe you get too vulnerable to those like questions, or everything is a bit maybe too much. And maybe now I just don't see I don't see these things anymore. I don't know. I definitely feel much better when I'm doing my thing and when I'm telling people to you about Ukraine, and I feel very powerful as well. I feel like I can, I feel it's my place. I found my place here. I don't feel like I'm anymore a second class person or a person that came to this country and maybe have some cultural gaps. I just feel comfortable.
Oh, that's amazing. So tell me a little bit, you mentioned about the theater that you started, and just before the interview, I read quickly an article that this year, because of the pandemic, of course, you can't have the festival anymore that used to fundraise money. Is that right?
Yes. So because when we started our youth theater studio in a village, next year we started a youth theatre festival called Bird in a Village. And because a lot of children that we worked with never left a village in their life, we couldn't take them to Kyiv or Lviv or other big cities on a daily basis. We thought we can bring the world to them. And so they could see that other children their age also do theater, because we didn't do a theater like a literature teacher would do, or it was very different, very innovative, physical theater. We used all our, we just finished university, or we were on our last year of university, so we were full of ideas and we wanted to bring more theater practitioners to work with young people. They were so talented, they were amazing, but also in front of their peer groups they appeared to be very different, and they felt a bit uncomfortable. So we wanted to show to peer group in the village and in the surrounding villages that this is normal, this is cool, this is, you can theater is really interesting thing, and other people your age doing the same, and you can show them what we did, what theater productions we did. And we just, it was so we started it 15 years ago, and then when I was living in Ukraine we were doing it every year for 3 days, 3 day festival where we had nearly 100 participants, and then we had 5,000, 10,000 people come in. It was all free. We were raising money all the time to make it free and accessible for everyone. It's non-competitive festival, so it's mostly about sharing different practices and visual arts, photography, circus, dance, everything, so performing arts. And when I left Ukraine, it was quite hard to do it every year. So they did it once in 2 years. And I feel I want to support the work that they're doing, because it's all free. It's, and children don't pay for their lessons, and all theater productions and festivals are based on volunteers. So I think it's very important for young people in very rural areas to access quality arts. I think it will make, it makes a big difference. I worked, the young people that I worked with 15 years ago changed their views because of our work, and to the better. We were working in communities where young people didn't finish schools properly, and they went abroad as a seasonal workers, and that's it. And there was no other kind of, no other alternative.
Ambition,
alternative to do anything else. So we were trying to change that and say that, look, the village is not, well, the community is not complete without young people that are staying actually here. and looking after their families and trying to create little businesses or little initiatives to make their place better. So that's what we were trying to create. And now there are a lot of little businesses. Some of our young people became children entertainers, or, you know, or they're doing a little circus studios, theaters, filming, photography. So it's just to unlock their potential. And this is not happening if nobody's doing it with them, you know? So.
Wow. It gives me goosebumps only when you talk about it. And well done for all this investment in children that you're doing, because that's the most important thing that you can do, invest in young children so that they can have a different kind of future. I'm interested to know what other kind of social projects you are involved in.
At the moment, I do support all of the projects that they do in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Let's then talk about the travel tours that you started doing, because you said your friend was mentioning, why don't you do these travel groups to Ukraine? This is how the idea started.
Idea was kind of started in the end of my living kind of in Ukraine in a commune. We were helping one of the social tours from Netherlands to do one of the trips to in a village, and we really enjoyed it. And it was just a very small group of people, 6-8 people, that traveled to listen to world music, so local village music, and stay in people's homes. So we helped to organize this kind of trips. And then it's something that I really enjoyed, and I thought that's great idea, because I don't like when people, the tours are very staged, so where people just see what is not real. I don't know, a lot of tourists go to Kiev and to Lviv in Ukraine, and they don't really see the real life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that life in rural areas and in cities is very different. So I wanted to show real Ukraine, a real experience. I wanted to show them connection, a strong connection with nature. Mm-hmm. I wanted to show beautiful wildflower meadows. I wanted people to try real home-cooked food that been, like, you know, using milk that been milked, hand-milked, and using very good ingredients, homemade butter and homegrown food, to see how it's all done, how people preserve their food, how pickles, fermenting, foraging, and incorporate it with local music that is very different from any mainstream music, and just see this beauty in everyday village life, because I think it's just fascinating.
Yeah.
So I just, because I really loved living in a village where I lived, I started trips to do in a village, and first trip was actually a fundraiser. Mm-hmm. For our social project, a news project in Ukraine, as it we did in 2012. And we had a very small group of 6 people. We took from Hungary all the way to Transcarpathia, and then we finished in Lviv. And it went really well. We showed shepherds in the mountains. We made cheese with them. We learned how to dance. We went out. We went out on a narrow gauge railway. We went to the markets. You know, we had amazing food. We drank amazing horilka, palenka, vodka, I really love that format of tourism, where you actually, we lived with people in the village in their homes. You our guests helped them to do their chores around the house. I mean, it was just it's just a very different lifestyle that I feel like English people are very now disconnected. Even if they're living in a village, they're disconnected from village life most of the time, you know?
I know what you mean, because when I was growing up in Moldova, my grandparents used to be self-sufficient. They used to grow all their things, have cows for milk, making cheese, as you're saying, making butter, making everything from scratch. And then when I came to the UK, obviously they're still farming in the UK, but to see that parents take their children to pay for a ticket to see a cow on a farm because they've never seen a cow. And for me, that sounded so weird when I grew up with cows, I grew up with all these things. And it was weird for me at first, like, why don't you know? Or they show on TV how some children nowadays, they don't know where the bacon comes from. And for me, it was so weird. Why do you not know that, you know, it was a little bit weird. Now I understand because of, you know, whatever is happening. But I do agree, at some point, there is this risk of being totally disconnected from the origins of the products, the connection with nature. And yeah, so I totally understand what you mean.
When I first came to UK, I just couldn't believe how tasteless food was. I was just could not believe. The potatoes didn't taste of anything. There are no good tomatoes. There is no
smell.
The products don't smell.
Yeah.
And it's just so sterilized and so sterile. I just felt like sick. I just thought, can't believe people have so much money and they eat so bad food, you know? I just couldn't understand how you don't invest in what you eat.
Yeah.
I think it's very, very important. One of the most important things in life, you have to grow your immunity and have a very healthy immunity. You have to invest in your food. For me, it's very important to eat homegrown organic produce. Now I buy all my vegetables from the organic farm. I go foraging. I show children where, you know, I have chickens. I'm not self-sufficient, and I probably won't be. I don't have a, like my parents had, and miles and miles of land where they grew all of the potatoes, but maybe one day I will.
But I guess I see it, for example, with the tomatoes, there is not enough sun in the UK to make them taste and grow properly. But what I was shocked as well is the supermarkets only choosing the, as they call them, the perfect
shape.
That doesn't make sense. I know that there are people that are trying to fight against it. And now they started selling the imperfect vegetables that are cheaper, but I don't get that concept at all. Why would you think something is more perfect than that? It just tastes the same. What's the difference? I don't get it.
I like when it's wonky shape. I think
exactly.
It's beautiful. It's just like nicer.
Exactly.
It's a unique vegetables, and it's just like the same. So much so much waste. I feel like.
That's another big problem, the waste in general. I was reading some statistics actually a few days ago, and the millions of tons of food that gets wasted in various countries. It's just such a shame when you know that in other areas people can't get food, and then it's mind-blowing. It just doesn't make sense in my head.
I also feel that people in UK don't really have a concept of eating seasonally. That's why they want everything to be available in the same time. When I first came, I think 10 years ago, I couldn't understand in a way that you have to prepare fresh every single day. I mean, it's nice, but then I remember my parents were cooking a borscht or a pan of soup, and that would last you 3-4 days.
You
then combine it with different other foods. So you do cook something every day, but not from scratch every single meal. I mean, at the moment I'm doing the same. I'm cooking every night, dinner from scratch, and it has to be all every different because I don't know, my family don't fancy eating the same thing next day, and I, you know, I just I'm fighting as I like against all the food waste.
Maybe you can freeze it because so my partner is British and he loves cooking more than me. I do enjoy cooking, but I just do simple things. He loves elaborate dishes. And before, when we both used to go to the office, now I'm just painting. But he used to cook a big batch at the weekend and then freeze it in little portions. And then maybe you can do two separate dishes, freeze them, and then maybe, you know, alternate so that you don't have to cook it every day. Or do you freeze food as well?
I do, but I haven't learned yet to cook from frozen. I don't know. I just never use it. It's not in my, I like cooking from fresh.
Yeah.
But whenever I do the food, I always use it for next meal. Yeah. One meal becomes the base for the next meal, and next meal becomes the base for the third meal. So
that's good.
I don't waste.
That's very good. I think that so from watching cooking shows with Mark, because he really loves watching them, and I'm just like, oh, starting getting more interested in it. I see that some chefs really do their menu depending on the seasonal vegetables, and I think they started showing a great example of being not doing a menu and then buying products, but the opposite, going and seeing what's fresh, what's in season, and then having these ingredients, this is what I'm going to put on the menu in the restaurant. I think this is the best way to do it at home and to do it in restaurants. You just see what's available first and then you decide what to cook. Is that what you do as well?
Yes. And when we do trips to Ukraine, I try to put on a menu all the every time different meals, so people could also see the full culinary experience of Ukraine as well. So not the same stuff. So I do take meals very seriously and planning menus, and it's always seasonal and something that is especially in that particular time in Ukraine, and we try to use some foraged goods as well in our meals.
Yeah,
we have a lot of chefs coming with us on a trips, or
Ola, for example.
Obviously because of Ola started to do trips with us maybe three four years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of maybe doing another one with her to Georgia, but it's all in plans. Well, COVID ruined a lot of plans for everyone. So we're trying to
adapt.
Yeah. Everyone's trying to adapt.
I just remembered a little thing. I'm really crazy about watermelons, for example, but all my childhood, I know that watermelons were in August, so here I absolutely refuse to eat watermelon outside August.
They just don't taste of anything.
Yeah.
I mean one good thing about coronavirus, there is no good thing, but it came out that we actually stopped going to supermarkets, full stop. So I haven't been for around 6 months now. And all our food's been delivered, and it's all from our local organic farms. So we are trying to eat seasonally, because it's the taste of tasteless food is the worst, really. I just can't do it.
So do you grow anything at all?
Yes. We just moved just before lockdown to our new place. It's not far away, so I lived in Hereford for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just in February we moved out of Hereford to Pontryle, this little village, and I have a bit more land, so we started to grow. I grew this year some potatoes, some sweet corn didn't work very well, tomatoes didn't work because I need to have a polytunnel. I have some curly kale, two other varieties of kale, Swiss chard.
Herbs? herbs?
Yes, I have some dill, some parsley, mint, oregano, thyme. Yeah, I mean
Very nice.
coriander, what else? Yeah, I have
Do you
some.
know what? I don't like coriander. But I think coriander, you either love it or hate it.
Well, actually, it's very strange, but when I came to UK,
yeah,
I couldn't eat any spicy food at all. I couldn't eat coriander. I really didn't like it. Because first of all, I thought it's a parsley. Then I tried it. I was like, oh, it's not parsley. It's definitely not parsley. But my taste buds really, really changed since in 10 years. It's very strange how it's developed. I love coriander now. I just put it sometimes in a thing that is just too much. And my husband like, Natalia, it's just like basically half a pound of the coriander. I'm like, yeah, I know. He's like, well, yes, it is, but it's too much. I'm like, okay. And I eat
That's
a lot
amazing.
Of pasta. And I also now like to eat chili. You know, I started to use chili in my cooking. I don't use it too much because kids don't eat it.
Okay, so we went off track completely. Mm-hmm.
I actually wanted to do a trip to Moldova as well. I mean, that's on my list of things because I have a friend's husband who is from Moldova.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking with him that we need to visit his parents, and his parents still live in Moldova in a little village near Chisinau.
Oh, that's great.
And he was talking about all these amazing peppers that you do in
stuffed peppers,
sour cream,
yeah.
cream, and they char grilled or something, and then you put them and slow cook them.
Yeah, you make it with the sauce.
Yes. So I was like, my mouth was watering when he was talking about this. I'm like, right, we definitely are doing it. So that was another thing that we were going to do this year, to explore a bit of Moldova.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll get in touch when we...
Definitely. And I mean, Moldova doesn't have much, except for woodland, it doesn't have much nature. So we don't have, you know, we are a locked country. We don't have seaside or mountains or anything. I'm sure you know this already, but we do have great wine. All this advertise our wine.
You know, as long as you have a great wine and great food, and
yes.
people are coming just for 1 week, you don't need that much. You know,
exactly.
Another thing that I'm doing in my trip, we don't travel too much, so mm-hmm. we only get into the place mm-hmm. and we stay there for 6 days to explore it, you know, because mm-hmm. I think you need to stay somewhere for a bit longer to actually get the swing of how the life flows, you know, the risk of the life, that it's different.
Yeah.
And people also enjoy that because a lot of people travel and try to see as much as they can, and they move from here to this here, but traveling in Ukraine, because it's huge, it's a big thing, you know, you have to spend on really bad roads 4 to 6 hours each day, and your next day you're just tired. So we decided that that's not a good idea. We just need to find a one place base and then do kind of day trips that are not too far, not too hard, not too strenuous.
I think that's amazing. And this is what we did with the motorhome. So we went for a year only in Europe, and we didn't even manage. We have only managed to see, and not even the full countries, only like 10 countries or something like that. We didn't even see the whole of Europe in a year because we didn't want to rush from place to place. We want to just, you know, sit in one place, explore the area, and then move to the next place. So I totally understand what you mean. Is this part also of the sustainability factor that you want to make your tours eco and sustainable?
Yes, well, the idea is we don't ever use any big hotels with pools that are owned by some oligarchs that sit in Kiev.
Yeah.
We also don't go to the places with a lot of infrastructure. So it's always off beaten track where Ukrainian tourists or any other tourists, you wouldn't see other groups, you know, walking near you. And I think it's very important because people that come to explore want to feel special, but also people that are hosting them, they think that their place also special as well. And because there is not a wave of tourists all the time, it doesn't ruin the everyday life for people as well, but it also brings some kind of income that otherwise they won't have. Yeah. And they don't need to also to adapt their life or like break their life to adapt for tourists, to be on a tourist trail in a way.
Yeah.
So it's why our groups are quite small, because it feels like you're kind of traveling in a just a bit like in a family, like a little family group. It's only 4, 5, 6, sometimes 8. I think the most we have 12 people in a group. And we try, yeah, so we leave money in a community. So we don't ask any travel companies in Ukraine to organize trips for us. It's all tailor-made itineraries made by us. We always go before and trial it out. And the idea is to find real local gems and to try something, yeah, something that you can't find online, you can't taste it anywhere else, something very different and very local to the area, you know. And I think we're trying to use only local transport, so we don't use again the company that owns buses all over the Ukraine. And so it would be a local transport provider if we need that. It also stays in a village, in a family, in an area. We try to not use any plastic. We sometimes even do cleanups around the area with our, like we did it in Georgia, for example. We started in 2019, we did 2 trips to Georgia as well, and we were going to do another 2. And it's kind of the same pattern. We are starting in a city, and then we straight away go either by train, because train is a lovely thing to do. I think in the post-Soviet Union countries, you still have this overnight train, this very Soviet Union style overnight. You can sleep on it because you don't have those trains anymore in Europe like that. So it's quite nice way to explore the country, because you can always open your eyes and see the change in landscape, but also the train goes quite slow, so it's soothing. Well, for most people it's soothing, for some people it's not, but it's also an experience, you know.
Exactly. I want to ask you as well, so I've seen that you do a few types of these traveling types, including a yoga one. And what I love the most about it, so usually when I see yoga retreats, they're, you know, you just drink juices all day and you don't eat enough. And when I read the description of your yoga tour, I loved it so much, because you do yoga, but also you have a hearty breakfast and you drink local wine, local vodka. I love that. I mean, I don't have anything against the other type, but this sounds more like my style of yoga.
Well, it's all a bit like Eastern European style yoga, you know.
I know. I loved it so much.
Well, we didn't do it again. I'm actually doing now yoga classes with a lady that was going to be on a tour, our teacher. I took in 2019 on our Carpathian cultural experience tour, and she really loved it. And she said, well, we just have to come and do a yoga holiday. So we do a holiday with a bit of yoga in it. I'm like, that works for me very well. Here is an itinerary. I think it will work. Yes. So we, yeah, but again, I don't know, maybe we'll do it again next year if we are allowed, or if it's possible. I don't know. It's a bit hard to predict what's going to happen. I had planned 6 trips this year, and they're all been cancelled. And most people, they transferred their bookings for next year. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we will
fingers
go
crossed.
Ahead. Fingers crossed it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's the situation. It affects a lot of, especially small independent businesses. Unfortunately, the huge companies at the moment are in big profit still, but the small ones.
The small are just finishing every day. I see people saying, I'm sorry, we can't continue anymore, and they're stopping. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking, really, what's happening. I hope we'll have better guidance from the government, because I don't know. I can't see another lockdown happening, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to do my work, really. I just feel I need to go back. I need to go back.
So back. With every tour, you go personally with every tour as well, yeah? Normally, not now, obviously. But
not now. Yeah. Well, that's why I don't do a lot of them.
Yeah.
I only have 6-7 a year, because I have 3 children. I have to be here as well for most of the time. So I just do from spring to beginning, like from May to October. And I try to do, 6-7 a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea.
And who are your customers? Are they usually from the UK? Are they, I don't know, because me, for example, I haven't explored Ukraine, I haven't explored Moldova enough. So I imagine, even if I'm Eastern European, I would be interested in that. So I'm wondering, are your clients also Eastern European, or do you have people from Britain coming to visit as well?
I have, my clients are started, when we just started, they were mostly British.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have customers from USA, Canada, Hong Kong, Austria, Germany, Wales, Australia. So all over the world. Some people have a connection to Ukraine. Some people have ancestors that were Ukrainian and they want to come and explore the country. Some people don't have any connection, never been to Ukraine, and just want something different to explore.
I
had few Ukrainians on a trip, or people that have a Ukrainian ancestry, but that's not my main customer. I think my main customer is a professional working in a city, and interested in Eastern Europe anyway, and want to see and explore really deeply. Mm-hmm. Something like the sustainable, and likes to be in a small groups, or it's a retired people that have a bit of time on their hands, and also want to see, to like sustainable travel, and never been to Ukraine and don't really feel safe to go by themselves, so they need somebody to go with. I have a lot of returning customers, so people that went with me once want to come again. So that's great. I just need to provide more destinations.
I have seen that you also offer discounts for the second.
Yes, I have like 10-15% discounts per second, but that doesn't really play a big role. My trips are not cheap, so I can't compete with big companies that are having tours all over the world, and but also you get a real quality.
Yeah.
On my trip, I put a lot of effort to make every trip very unique, and I look really after customers. We have also another people on a tour all the time, who is a local guide. And in Ukraine is my dear friend, Tanya, that we started our theater project with. And in Georgia, it's our other theater director, also friend, Otar, that we're doing. So every single trip has a very, is properly thought through, and we sometimes change in the itineraries to suit. So if there is a group of people that have less physical abilities or more physical abilities to do walks or hikes, we could tailor-made. So each trip that you look, you could just send a message saying, could we possibly see something?
Yeah.
And it's possible, you know, so it's very, it could be very tailor-made to the, because of the size of the group is not huge, it's small, so it have alternative itineraries as well.
Sounds amazing. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about, and it's probably the last thing, but because the time is flying when you're having fun, I'm talking to you, is the beautiful, beautiful things that we can find on your website. So the headscarves, the shirts, they are organic cotton and they are handmade. Tell me more about them because they are absolutely gorgeous.
So when I started to do trips, I thought I somehow have to promote what I'm doing. And I thought it would be the best thing to do is to start selling some really interesting objects from Ukraine, support local craftsmen and sell things that are really practical, but also really beautiful and unique and not mainstream, just made on a factory stuffs. And Ukraine has a very big potential, so there is a beautiful wood and textiles. And I was always interested in a costume since I was since university, really, in a costume design. And I really loved how different Ukrainian costume is from region to region and the history around it, and also about how much work goes into each object. It's just incredible. And I just love the hand-spun, hand-woven material. I like linen and hemp and hand embroidery. You just can't find that quality nowadays in even hand-embroidered shirts, but on a factory-made material, it just doesn't look as nice ever. So I started to sell this homespun, hand-woven wool rugs first knitted woolen socks, because when I discovered them, I just loved them. So we even have a trip how you can come and make one yourself and bring to UK. And they're very unique objects to Ukraine because they are not done anywhere else, I think, except maybe one little village in Romania. And they're old techniques from 17th century that still survived in the village. So I just decided to bring things that bring me joy, and I'm really proud as a Ukrainian that I made in my country. When I'm selling, I tell the history of each garment and how it's made and where it's from and why the pattern is like it is, and people just love it. So the really my business consists of two parts. Mm-hmm. From May to October, September, I do trips, and then from September to April or May, I have stall on different craft fairs and vintage fairs, handmade events where I sell beautiful vintage homespun, handwoven textiles, and tell people about the trips as well.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you so much. I wish you best of luck, and I wish that you can retake the tours as quickly as possible and as safely as possible.
Thank you.
It was really, really lovely to talk to you, and well done for promoting all these beautiful things and the things that actually matter.
Thank you.